Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Today we're going to take a break on the heavier subjects, and we're going to go into something that I actually get paid to lecture about, which is going to be video games, and most specifically World of Warcraft, created by Blizzard. Obviously, it's not going to appeal to a lot of you folks, so if you just need some noise in the background, this is probably an episode for you. For those of you into this kind of thing, you might find it pretty fun. Before I get into this, I want to give you a little bit of my background so you know you're not just listening to someone with opinions. You are only listening to someone with opinions, but it's a fairly qualified opinion. I worked professionally in the video game business from 1989 to 2013. I had my own company for 10 years, roughly, 2005 to 2013, plus some sort of drifting personal projects for 2 years after that. My background very quickly, and you've got guys that listen to all the videos, get your barf bags because you're going to hear a couple things twice. I worked on my first video game in 1981 at the age of 11 with my uncle, and I was the artist. My big thing when I was a kid was I was a pretty good sketch artist and oil painter by the age of 9. And so I was able to paint album covers and stuff at a really young age. So by the time I started working with my uncle, I was converting my illustrations into graph paper and then turning those into varying layers of color on the Texas Instruments 99-4A. But I have programmed games on the Commodore 64, the Apple II, the IBM old PC, the very first green one with no graphics cards. I had to use all the special characters to create a horse racing game. So I was using like pipes and greater than and less than signs to create the moving legs of a horse. And that was based off a drag race game I had made on the Apple II with full-blown graphics and sound and everything as my high school project. So one was in Pascal on the PC, one was in the BASIC on the Apple. At the same time, I was at home on a Cocoa computer, a Texas Instruments, or sorry, Radio Shack TRS-80 Cocoa computer version 2. And so with that computer, I created awesome levels of stuff. I mean, from keyboards to a product called FileMaker, which is not the same one that sold, but it did exactly the same thing. I did paint application with fonts back in the mid-80s, before any of that existed, at least on that platform, of course. I had to live in 32K of RAM or 64K of RAM to do everything. It was crazy. And I was just a kid, really young kid, doing this stuff. So by the time I got to 1989, the reason why I got the job, outside of getting laid off, was that I had already had my digital art portfolio. It was gigantic by 89. So I was probably 19 years old at the time. And I was 19 years old at the time, about to turn 20 later that year. And I walked in, didn't really have a color portfolio because none of the computers did color except for the Amiga. And if you had a VGA card for your PC, which I did not, that was the issue. So fast forward a little bit, I get to Electronic Arts as a consultant in 1993 and found out one of my best friends had gone from the venture we shared in 89 to 92. And he went in there a year later and got into Electronic Arts is all kinds of different positions, and now he's a big game producer. But he and I and another dude named Kurt sat down in an apartment, and we videotaped it. Somewhere I have the videotape. And it's us sitting down to plan creating the first MMO, because we realized that the engine had come out where you could actually infinitely scroll a world and use fog as a shroud for the loading sequence out there. And so we held a few sessions on how to do this, because Kurt was a absolute genius, and Billy's a great producer, role player, and I do my engineering side and my artistic side and my game design side, because in the 80s you had to design your game on paper and then write all the script, do all the art, and do all your programming. You were one dude that did it all, right? So I started getting into the bowels of Electronic Arts. I was doing consulting for the QA department, writing a database for them at the first time. And here I come in with all this experience, and I'm doing some weird thing off to the side. But you do everything in EA when you work there. You pitch in on everything constantly. But 1994, EA purchased, I don't know if this is the actual year that they purchased them, but EA eventually purchased Origin, which Origin now runs EA. And so they had had this game called Ultima. And it's really funny. My girlfriend's brother played every single Ultima when I was in the Midwest. And so I got a chance to see this game, but I never played it. And so by the time we got this news that Origin was creating the first MMO based on Origin, or based on Ultima. So it was Ultima Online. And so it took 4 years to get this game out the door in 1998. And so we were the first MMO on planet Earth. And of course, the copycats came in really, really quickly. God bless them. EverQuest was the next one that really blew the doors off because it was 3D. Brilliant game engine. I know a lot of friends that lost their lives programming or playing that game. And I just mean they played it so much they didn't have a social life. But then Ultima Online was extremely popular. Obviously, it was the only game in town for a long time until EverQuest came around. And so then when the Origin people saw EverQuest going to 3D, they're like, well, we need to do this. And so they started a secret project called Ultima Online 2, or as we called it internally, UO2. And you can still see a trailer of this, a demo trailer of this online on YouTube, although it's really low res. But after a year and a half of making that product and having no perspective of what it takes to make a product like that, Electronic Arts went to Origin and said, look, man, you're spending a ton of money. When are you going to have this thing done? And they said, well, probably another year and a half. And they said, well, we don't trust you, so we're canceling the project. Now, if any of you had seen UO2, it was essentially World of Warcraft way before World of Warcraft, at least 4 years before World of Warcraft came out. Now, as rumor has it, obviously the group imploded who was creating that, and some folks went to Blizzard, as I understand it, and got their artwork in there and maybe some of their engineering, because there were essentially characters that looked exactly the same between the two games, minus just a few little copyright changes, right? Especially the big fat guys with the big hatchets and the chains. There was one of those dudes in UO2. But the idea that a character would dance silly just as something to do was in UO2 in 1999, the beta or the delta or whatever it was. And then everyone was asking, why would you want to do that? And then when it got inside the World of Warcraft franchise, it was like, well, of course, this is a funny place, right? But UO, Ultima Online, the Ultima franchise, wasn't a big jokey platform. So they were doing these creative things that were brilliant. No one was getting it. Okay, so there's your setup. So I'm coming to you as a software engineer. I'm coming to you as a video game artist. And I'm coming to you as a video game designer. I have taught countless classes in colleges all up and down California, from Berkeley to Chapman University to Noman School of Film, Art, and Game, and just a lot of different lectures in little halls here and there. UCI University, as they started their game university. So this is something I've been paid to talk about in general. So as we go into this World of Warcraft analysis, which I think is utterly fascinating. For me, it's a once-in-a-lifetime game that I think recently, last year in 2018, they made too many mistakes, the very avoidable, and having at least half a dozen close friends in Blizzard by 2008... And then looking at where it is today, they're great people, but I think they've replaced it with too many folks that I guess just don't get what the customer wants at this point. It's really sad. So Blizzard's going through a lot of changes right now in 2019. Activision's going through a bunch of changes. And I don't know how you solve this problem, because you can't fire your way necessarily into success, right? You've got to get the old school folks in there that understand gaming and have them work on your title and figure out first what's wrong, where'd you make mistakes, where's the fatigue, and then go in a different direction, right? And at the end, I'm going to share my expansion that I designed for World of Warcraft. So we'll button that up. News at 11. There you go. So vanilla World of Warcraft comes out in, I believe, 2004. And yeah, because a guy was playing it in one of the places I was consulting some programming. I saw it. It was beautiful. And I was like, I have to stay away from this product right now because it will suck me in. It is everything I ever wanted in an MMO. And so I didn't get into the game until December of 2005, vanilla. Of course, I joined this game. And for those of you who don't know anything about World of Warcraft, I doubt you would continue watching. But if you do get through this, let me throw you 2 minutes. Warcraft was a game created in the 90s, which was a funny sort of medieval resource management game. So you build little buildings, you tell people to go out and grab resources by chopping down a tree or mining gold or whatever you needed to do to build your buildings. And then you would have these storyline battles between the scenarios that they program. So they would create like a faction next door that will come and attack you. And you, so you go through these phases and you go through these levels and you level up. And they created several versions of the title in 2D. And then they eventually went to 3D, I think a little too quick. And the computers were too slow to really show this off in its glory. They're actually porting it right now to the modern day computers because one of the founders said, you know, I want to play the old game. I don't think anyone's interested in playing the old game besides a few old farts that won't make up the expense to create the game and the profit margin, unfortunately. So I think going backwards is just a fun thing to do to kind of say, hey, you know, Corvette builds another 64 Stingray just because it's really cool. And they'll sell every model, but they won't make that many. So that'll probably be the way it goes. I could be wrong. So this thing goes on a hiatus for, I don't know, I guess it would be, I think about 96, 97, people were pretty much done with the game. I mean, for those of you loyalists, you're going to say I'm full of crap, and good for you that you love the game that much. But by 2004, the franchise was largely mothballed, and so when this thing comes out, you have a revolution in MMOs. They learned every lesson from EverQuest, every lesson from Ultima Online, and anything else that was out there, such that when this came out, it was balanced, it was beautiful, and it ran really well on any computer that they said it was compatible with. Considering this was 3D, and it had a lot of assets in there, it was amazing. Now, I don't have the lineage and the change history from 2004, which I think was like March or something, up to December 2005. So I did play it. I just watched people play it. But it was utterly gorgeous. They did introduce some extra classes. But the way the game works is that you pick a race. And so you'd be human or orc or troll or whatever. And you, Tauren, which is a cow race. And then you pick your class. So you're a hunter, you're a warrior. Hunter didn't release with the original game, it came later. You're a rogue, which is sort of like a thief, you know, you're a backstabber and that kind of stuff. But you venture out on your own doing a single player thing, and eventually you start grouping with other people to share the quests. If you got to kill 20 antelope and grab their hooves to bring it to some guy in town, you can get together and you'll share every other spoil. We'll go to the next guy in the rotation. And it was it was beautiful. And then they had the dungeons, which were a very tough thing to figure out with the initial Ultima Online. Dungeons were not phased, which means there was a boss in a cave, and everybody would go in there at the same exact time and kill the boss, and everyone's sitting around waiting for the boss to respawn, and they kill it, and then, you know, kill it in 2 seconds, and a bunch of people didn't get to touch the guy. So the loot is hard to get. Managing, you know, your turn was impossible. And so they eventually figured out phasing, which is you go into a dungeon and you get your own room with your guys. There's the boss. Only your guys have access to it. And infinitely in the background, a bunch of other people are going into the same exact room and they're getting their own little instance of the dungeon. That was a new technology that was figured out. I don't know if EverQuest figured that out. I never saw my buddy do a dungeon in EverQuest. But World of Warcraft had it figured out. When I got there in December, the game allowed you to get to level 60, and then that was it. They were going to need to expand the game to get you any higher. And so I would go into the main town, and almost everyone in the whole game was at 60, just sitting around waiting. And all they did was they went into the dungeons, because the dungeons had the challenge for them. It was a boss that was so difficult, it took 40 people to kill. And then the loot was very sparse. So if you had a bunch of fancy loot on, You know, this dude had been in and out of a dungeon 200 times, at least. Now, the object of the game, no one wants to admit it, but it's actually a doll dress-up game. That's what it is. So, you're trying to create a doll, which is your avatar inside the game, and you are dressing it up. You're getting better weapons, better armor, you're leveling your skill set with those objects. And so that's the end game. You want a better ride because you can buy these mounts that you would... The first mounts were just all land-based mounts. And then as they expanded up the game, they came out with flying mounts, which is a big deal. So fast forward, you have several expansions from 2005 all the way up to present day, 2018. Each expansion has always been met with a lot of... criticism here and there, but in the end, most of the time, these expansions are successful. In fact, I'm going to go through the expansions and why I think they were successful and why I think they weren't successful. And the thing that would happen to me is there would be an expansion that I thought would totally suck and it ends up being my favorite expansion, and then there are expansions that look amazing and they end up being bore fests. But with each expansion, what ends up happening is, for those of you who haven't played the game, you get, in the vanilla game, you had two continents on a planet. And what they ended up doing with one expansion is creating a whole new planet with its own big giant continent, separate places you can go to that all look different, behave different. Then they realized, well, we don't really have to do that. We can actually create new continents on this previous map. And so most of the expansions have all been inside this original map. Now, the cool thing about World of Warcraft versus all other games that aren't like World of Warcraft, so for other MMOs, they might be in this category. But as a parent, I knew that I was going to be playing lots of games because of my career, and so my daughter was going to see me playing games. It'd be hard for me not to tell her, or hard to tell her that she couldn't play a game, but I didn't want her to see things that were... I didn't want to get her into a mind-numbing game that was going to rot her brain, right? And so I let her play games that were educational for the first several years of her life. When she crossed 10 years old, I let her start playing The Sims, which allowed her to figure out how life works in a very big way. It was very powerful for her. I've talked about it several times on the show, but when she got into Sims 2 and they could make babies, my kid learned that you need an income and a stable family before you start having children because they demand a lot of resources, money, and time. And she learned that, literally told me after playing the hardest level first, she just couldn't beat this trailer trash level. And she goes, man, you just got to be married. You got to have a job before you have kids. I was like, good for you. But she ended up playing World of Warcraft and absolutely devoured the game. And what I loved about it was that it had reading comprehension. You have to read a quest and you have to translate that into action. And a lot of these quests were written in riddles. And so you had to have a little bit of that IQ stuff, that knowledge-based, intelligence-based thinking to get the thing done. Plus, the best thing of all was that you had to be tenacious about grinding to get a quest finished. You had to work really, really hard over and over and over. So that's what life does, right? That's what a job is. That's what your education is. So my kid got this huge reinforcement of that algorithm right when she needed it. So right off the bat, you know, you have Vanilla WoW. Vanilla WoW can't receive any other score but a 10 out of 10, or 5 stars out of 5 stars. You can't give it anything less than that because they hit it out of the park, as is evident by their user base that blew up, their profit margins that blew up. It was amazing. Now, could they keep all the people that got to 60 completely happy? No. But I mean, what can you do? You got to create an expansion. That takes a little while. If you never create an expansion before, then you're trying to iron out the rules of how to create an expansion. Now, I have a Fry's Electronics down the street in Fountain Valley, California. And one night I wanted to go buy something at Fry's. And so I grabbed my girlfriend. I'm like, would you go with me? And she's like, sure. That's a real girlfriend, let me tell you. Well, we get to the parking lot, and there's a line around the whole store. And I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And they said, the new expansion for World of Warcraft's coming out. We're all waiting to get it, and all the employees are inside Fry's. They're going to sign our boxes as we go through. This is Burning Crusade, or otherwise known as BC. So I'm like, do you mind, honey, if we stand in line? It wasn't terribly long, you know, at first. And she's like, no, okay, I'll do it. So we stood in line. I bought this box, got it signed by everybody. It was really cool, man. I still own that box, by the way. Brought it home, plugged it in, installed it. And I have to say, pound for pound, beauty for beauty, game design for game design, Burning Crusade for me is the ultimate expansion. Now you might think, well, you're an old fart. That's why you think that. Maybe. What I loved about World of Warcraft is going to, or Burning Crusade, excuse me, as opposed to these other ones, which we're going to get into, was that they had game playing at the forefront of the design. What does that mean? When you were in Burning Crusade, you have a brand new world with a bunch of different regions. So imagine like a continent, and it's all balkanized into these different regions. And these regions were distinct, and I mean super distinct. If you walked to the edge of one of these realms, you looked down at the soil, and it was orange. You could walk to the next area, and it might be purple on the ground, or green. Like a weird green, like a weird possessed green, or that could be lush, almost Hawaii-looking green, right? Nagran. Or it could be just absolutely dry desert with these crazy spikes coming out of the earth. It was designed to create an environment. And when you walked into that world, they lit the sky differently. So all the ambient light bouncing off everything that you brought gained this mood, right? I believe the land's called Zangarmarsh. Something like that. The purple place with all of the mushrooms. The soundtrack for this game was truly unreal. I mean, it was beautiful. When the game designers of World of Warcraft said, we heard the soundtrack for the first time, we wept because it was so beautiful and so amazing. It's literally John Williams level stuff, in my opinion. And the soundtracks were appropriate to the area that you were in. What's nice about the world being arbitrary and all the different areas being very, very distinct, almost designed in a bubble where they weren't asking questions to the cubes next to them. What are you making your world look like? And, you know, instead of saying, oh, it's this way, this way, this way, we're going to make sure our worlds blend together. I'm sure the statement was something like, we're not telling you. You do your world, we do our world. It's a competition. All right. I mean, it may never happen that way. But when I played the game, it was like having a bunch of different worlds to play in. And that was brilliant. And that prioritized the game, the gamer, and not some other agenda. It also freed up the artists to do whatever the hell they wanted to in their world. They don't have to worry about what's going on in the rest of the continent. And this is something that was lost in the very next expansion, which I think was a big mistake. The next expansion was The Wrath of the Lich King. And I believe they won an Emmy or something for the cutscene on this game. Where the Lich King is fighting a dragon and he's in the ice, or it's his buddy's resurrecting his dragon or whatever, and it's the ice cracking, and it's just the most beautiful intro scene. All the cutscenes of everything in Blizzard are utterly breathtaking, and they pay a lot of money to their employees to get it right. Or at least that was the case, right? But Lich King created a new continent called Northrend, just north of the two main continents in the initial vanilla WoW. But they did something that spread this big brush of boredom over the whole place. It's a northern continent, so it's kind of like Antarctica, but it's in the north. And it's a mountainous terrain, all this other stuff. And there's some lush areas in it. But what they did, at least from the outside looking in, was they said, well, you know, Burning Crusade was not logical in terms of a geological sensibility. And it was like, you can't have orange soil turn into, you know, purple soil. It's not just a line in the ground that happens, right? You gradually have to change land, and it's all based on temperature and storms and where the coast is and all this other bullshit that we don't care about, right? So the world itself was primarily covered in snow, and the theme of the world was a dark, evil Lich King, which is sort of like, isn't that the archetype of most stories? Bad guy, lives in a weird world. Well, there, with Burning Crusade, you had these enchanted places. Nagran, which is absolutely gorgeous, which is a super high-level place to go that you wouldn't go right away. Zangarmarsh, which is this beautiful, again, purplish kind of world. They also had their dark areas as well. But you could kind of be in that dark area and, you know, kick a bunch of dudes' butts, and then you could go over to Nagran. I used to just hang out there and fish. You know, it was like just a beautiful Hawaii-looking joint, and just chill out. You know, I'm doing something else, listening to my little bob in the water make a splash. I hit the key to fish, and then I catch 500 fish and run off and do something else. With Northrend, you're sitting in this world, in Lich King, I should say. You're just in a dreary kind of place the entire time. You can't really find anything that's... There was like a meteorite crater place that had sort of the lush tropical world, but it was boring. We got through it. Yeah, the quests were very clever. The quests are always the part that usually wins you over when it comes to the expansion. You may not like the world, but then you start playing the quest, you're going, that was clever, that was cool, I like the way you changed that, and you changed this. But we noticed something as well, which is that you got a company making at one point over $1 billion a year in product sales and monthly subscriptions. And by the time Lich King came out, we noticed they were repurposing a ton of the assets that were in Vanilla or Burning Crusade. They take spiders and just change them a little bit. They change the texture a little bit, add a few more bumps, maybe an eyeball that didn't exist before. The ogres kept showing up, just with different paint on them, different capabilities, stronger. It was the same old shit. Now you might, you know, cop this line, which is like, oh, well, they were too poor to create new animals. Bullshit. All right, this place is making money hand over fist. They could have subbed out anything. Their artists were off the chain, right? The amount of art that was created for each one of the expansions that never turned into an actual beast was I don't know, 100 to 1. So that in itself started looking really strange. Why? Why are you repurposing things when you got enough money to make it original? Don't know. If you had a rig that you already animated, we can install that rig into something completely different. They never got really creative with it. Like a two-headed monster with like one breathes fire, one breathes, ice. Never, just a basic creative thing there, right? But now the interesting thing about World of Warcraft, because I had actually popped out and started my own game company in 2005, and we were doing mostly casual titles for online web browsing stuff, right? Having lived 15 years in the other stuff, we always used World of Warcraft as the conversation centerpiece, the cornerstone for all game design. No matter how casual the game was, we'd always be in a conversation somewhere, go, well, you know how World of Warcraft does that? This is sort of what we're doing from that theme. And of course, World of Warcraft's built off themes and other games, but they really took it up a notch, I will definitely say. Now, even though I might have a criticism about a particular expansion, let me tell you, every single expansion until this recent one has enchanting worlds, great dungeons, great places, places that when they load and you see it, you feel just warm and fuzzy. I typically would not play the game much in summer and OD in winter. And I was anticipating that happening this year, but it ain't happening this year. Now, the third expansion is, I think, most often referred to as one of the worst expansions up until this recent one, which is Cataclysm. Cataclysm had a cutscene that was the trailer that got us all to buy the game, which was a mechanical dragon created by dwarfs who, in lore of all lore, you know, dwarfs create the weapons for the gods. I mean, they create Thor's hammer. I mean, they're just master craftsmen, right? Elves aren't bad craftsmen, but they're more ornate, self-serving, typical creative worlds where they build stuff for themselves. They don't build anything for anybody else. And it's all dainty, right? But Cataclysm started to show the inability, in my opinion, to create a sort of a unified story that would really tie an expansion completely together. It really started looking to me like they just had a bunch of random ideas and sort of stuffed it all into a particular box. It was the very first time that the forums started filling up with people saying, I'm out of this game. I was in a guild at one point where I had dudes that were top of everything. At every single, suit of armor they could possibly have. I think arenas were starting around that time, and they were just winning all kinds of stuff, and they still bailed. They were like, this is crap. I'm not playing this title. Now, some of the dungeon quests involved fighting this dragon, and it was so monumentally huge, like a real dragon in Dungeons & Dragons, which would be bigger than Godzilla. You only could fight little parts of the beast at once. You crawled up its back, and then you ended up fighting it where it was half inside this canyon, reaching out to get you. And so it wasn't like, one dude striking it with the sword, it's dead, like Dragon Slayer. But Cataclysm introduced water, which was very, very interesting. It suffered from water, because it sort of slowed down your moving, and so they gave you a little seahorse that you could use to get around pretty quickly in the title, because they realized there was a bit of a flaw. It was kind of neat to be in water. You never had any problem breathing in the water, because they gave you, I forgot what it was, they gave you some ability that just removed the water problems. But then you jump in the water someplace else and you drown if you didn't know what the hell you were doing, right? But it was enchanting up to a point. But again, it was, largely constrained by an underwater geological engineer that came in there and said, this kind of coral exists. So they're policing the artwork based on reality, which is what everyone is trying to escape, right? Then there was this 2-year pause while we're all digesting Cataclysm. Again, a lot of people, my guild just blew up after Cataclysm released, because all the heads left. Then there was Mists of Pandaria. It looked like Kung Fu Panda initially. When I saw the trailer of it, I was so heartbroken that they were going to make this panda race that was going to go for both Alliance and the Horde. For those of you who don't know what that means, inside this world, we have two giant factions. We have the more human faction, which is all kind of warm fuzzy. You get to play humans, basically. And then you have the Horde side, which didn't have a human-like character until they came out with the Blood Elves, which are basically humans with big giant ears, who are awesome. And so I'm seeing this Mists of Pandaria, and I like the Kung Fu Panda movies, but I thought, man, what are we doing with this? Where's the gritty lore of World of Warcraft? And so I was very pessimistic, but I bought it because, you just got it at the time. It wasn't bad. I was kind of frustrated with the first few quests, easy for me to say, and then I fell in love with it. Mists of Pandaria turned out to be one of my favorite expansions of all time. And the interesting thing was Metzen was interviewed just after the expansion released, I believe at a BlizzCon. And they were sort of passing up some of the criticism and giving him a chance to kind of, bat it down, which he did a great job. But the most brilliant thing Metzen said, and I think I got this right, was, I'm paraphrasing him, of course, but he said something to the effect of, I wanted to create a race that made you think about war, because you don't have to be angry and killing something all the time. And the pandas are based off of, obviously, Japanese/Asian, face-saving honor system, right? It's almost like a samurai-type lifestyle. And it was they were largely alcohol makers. And so, but they had this just beautiful manicured world. Now, again, they went for this geological accurate island, which again gets boring after a while. but at least was pleasant. It was a nice, uplifting, bright green world. And so wherever you were pretty much okay. Yes, there was snow and that kind of stuff, because they basically figured out snow looks great, not really realizing that it might get boring after a while, you know? Now, I should take a quick step to describe the fact that they eventually introduced flying into the game. And flying was a big problem, not because of the expansions, but because of the original vanilla game. There's a lot of construction that's invisible inside these levels at a higher elevation. So there would be literally walls that had, you know, collision detectors on them to say, you're bumping into a wall, you're bumping into a wall, if you could get in the air. So they couldn't just open up flying right away, because they had to go back and redo the world. And when Cataclysm came out, they destroyed and changed a lot of the vanilla world, such that places that you used to be all the time were gone, which I think was actually a fairly cool idea. I think that it did sort of break some of the hearts of folks that were going to, you know, want to go back and go through their levels at the old style. So they ended up phasing the old with the new, which was kind of cool. But it was sort of, it was actually a great story situation, because you ended up mourning the loss of these great traditional places that you were able to go to in the game. But they had to totally redo a lot of the artwork and the background to allow flying to occur, at least in vanilla. And I believe there was, the way they said it was, Orgrimmar on the north side, and sorry, I always play Horde, you'd run into a wall if you were able to fly. So they fixed that and got flying going. And it was actually something you could purchase pretty quickly in the game as long as you leveled up. But then, as it was rumored internally, now there's two reasons why they do this, but they end up making flying a super pain in the ass to get in the new region. So you could fly in all the previous regions, you had achieved flying capability, but for some reason you couldn't fly in the new world, which makes no sense, but that's fine, it's a game. But the artists were getting upset that if you flew, you wouldn't see their artwork. Now, I don't know if that's true. I could, as an artist, I think I could get behind that a little bit and understand that. But they also had simplicity in questing if you could fly, because you could fly into an area, hit, kill some folks on the edge, and then fly out and go to another weak spot and hit. And, you know, you still have to do the fight, so it's not like you're suddenly leveling through the game extra fast. A little bit faster, I'm sure. For super-duper badass players, and these guys hit maximum level, right? Every expansion gives you 10 more levels. And so you could get a kid within 24 hours hitting the top 10 levels, because they've been preparing and they played the beta of the game and they knew where to go. So, interesting. So after Mists of Pandaria, we have the Warlords of Draenor. And this is... there was something that Metzen said in his interview about Mists of Pandaria that he dropped that immediately had me concerned. And he said, oh man, we've got the next 5 expansions figured out. Maybe he even said 10. And he goes, we're really going to dig into the lore of World of Warcraft. Like, oh, suddenly you're going to dig into the lore? Because it's been a pretty lore-based game, right? Again, Burning Crusade did a beautiful job creating its proprietary storylines, which were fantastic. You always want to be expanding your lore, in my opinion, not going inward to try to get at some Freudian realization of your previous lore. And you know, the lore at Blizzard is gigantic for Warcraft. They've got two to four people dedicated to writing lore all day long, you know. And it's very important that you can do that, that you can afford to build up your world. But they... you know, they had this problem where, again, they were repurposing tons of old assets. Again, Mists of Pandaria was no different. You had the panda race in their world, but you didn't have the real freshness of all the different creatures and things. I mean, there's always a couple new creatures, but, I mean, come on. You had 2 years to do this. You know, it's been 6 months designing new creatures. They don't have to have any sensibility, and then you plug them into the lore and give them a backstory and fill them up, right? I've done this several times, Electronic Arts. But Warlords of Draenor got you up to level 100. And you just, for me personally, It was everything that had bored me to death condensed into one expansion. However, the quest designers were able to keep you going. They were able to keep you excited in playing the title. So the sixth expansion, I'm moving quickly through these because they don't have a lot to describe, in my opinion. Legion introduced the Broken Isles, which was a new continent near Azeroth. And you have more of this introspective lore, more reason to get bored with the game, because you're going back into, you are getting a chance to see some of the characters that you've never seen before, but you don't get the sort of, hey, if Walt Disney were still alive, for instance, and he were to say, there's a brand new world I'm making, you would know that whatever he is creating will be a new world. It won't be like Tomorrowland, it won't be like Frontierland or Adventureland, it'll be a new world. And World of Warcraft goes, it's a new park, and if it, you know, it's when it opens, it's Frontierland 2.0, you know, and you're kind of like, man, I don't dislike Frontierland, there's no criticism of that place, but I've already been there, and for you to just version it up, not enough, guys, not enough, right? But Legion introduced some really amazing cities that, and a new leveling system where you got a weapon that would allow you to expand a talent tree. And one of the things that ended up happening with the game was that, and again, the game is so expansive, this episode can only touch on the basics, or I should have said that at the beginning. But there, in Vanilla WoW, you had a talent tree, which between Vanilla WoW and Burning Crusade just kept getting more and more complicated to figure out how do you get your character configured so you can actually beat this particular boss. And so you would save different configurations for different dungeons, and that just got to be crazy. If any of you see the old brilliant clip called Leroy Jenkins, you'll know the preceding minutes up to the point where Leroy Jenkins goes and does his thing. And I'll explain that one second for those of you who totally don't know. They were looking at calculators that had been generated outside of the game to figure out how successful they would be going into the next room of a dungeon. That's how complicated the game was. And once you make something that complicated, sometimes it plays really well to your core audience, and then other times it's like, geez, this is a little too much. People can't just fall into the game and make it work, right? The other problem they ran into, before I explain Leroy Jenkins, is that if you're selling an expansion that takes you from level 90 to level 100, you have to have a bunch of people at level 90 to want to buy the expansion. So each time the expansion came out, they, what they call nerfed, they made it easier and easier to get to 90, and then it started to get harder. When you leveled in Vanilla WoW, it was torturous to get through the last 10 levels. I mean, you were playing every single day for hours and hours and hours, and you just got like a 10% bump on your level. Whereas after 5 expansions, you could get to 90 in, geez, like a week if you're just a casual player. It was cool. And what's beautiful is you're giving them money for an experience. They shouldn't impose on you too much restraint for you to have the experience as quickly as you want to have it. Now, they're always worried about fatigue, and we're going to get into that once we get through these expansions really quickly. But Legion ended up being pretty damn cool. And the previous expansion, we were given something called a garrison, which was a little city that you got to make by yourself and build these little buildings and slots and level them up separately. And you got all kinds of neat amenities. Like if you were a tailor, it would make you tailor things and give you supplies for it. So that was brilliant. But then they abandoned it when they went to Legion. You had no reason to go back to that place. And so by ignoring a previous creation, it was sort of like that Apple computer thing. They make QuickTime, it's really cool, and then they just leave it. And they just abandon the format altogether. And then, oh, ProRes comes out, and then all of a sudden they're back into it again. But every time you abandon a technology, so do your users. And so when you want them to come back, you're the boy that called wolf, right? Well, this is where they make the big-ass mistake they made. Legion created this beautiful system where you got this very special weapon that then you gathered experience and these little items to level the weapon essentially infinitely, but it got double the difficulty every single time that you leveled it. But you earned it, you know, and you could log in every single day and do your daily quests, which gave you more credit towards upgrading your weapon. And it was a reason to come back into the game. They learned something from like games like Clash of Clans, which is you must log in every day, repair your base, take all your money, do upgrades, maybe shield up for a week so you can save more money. It's a reason to get back in the game. So we all fell in love with this thing, this artifact points that turn into this extra leveling system. Plus they'd completely simplified the talent tree, which was really cool. Now, some people hate the fact that they made it easier. I think that you have to look at how meticulously difficult it was to get into a dungeon in the Leroy Jenkins days. So Leroy Jenkins, real quick, there was a level in... The name of the dungeon escapes me at the moment. But there was a room full of all these dragon eggs. And if you walk by a dragon egg, it would pop. And it would pop all the other dragon eggs, about 10 of them. And they're really hard to knock down. These draglings, little tiny draglings flying around, right? And so they knew that you had to go in and you hit one of the eggs and you pull everybody back into the previous room. You pull the draglings in, you knock them all down. Then you hit the next stack, until you wipe out... must be like 10 stacks of these things, and then you can start fighting the boss at the end of the room. And at, you know, back in vanilla WoW, it was just a deadly ass room to touch. Everybody had to be standing in the right place. No one could touch the extra eggs, otherwise you'd have 20 of these draglings and you'd have a wipe. So all these dudes are standing in a room and they're doing this calculator, and they're boring half the players. And one of the guys character names was Leroy Jenkins. I think that was his name of the character. And so he gets bored at one point, and they go and they say, "Okay guys, you think you might be ready for this?" "Yeah, okay." And then this guy just screams, "Leroy Jenkins," and he just runs in the room, hits all the eggs, and they're standing in the previous room going, "Did he just go in there? Oh my god." And they all run in there and they try to fight, and everybody wipes. And it was just, they call him an idiot or something, and his last words were, "At least I got chicken." And he ended up being so famous for that, I got recorded and I got put on the web, and he became so famous they kept inviting that player to the BlizzCons to scream it into a microphone. It was really cute. So then Battle for Azeroth, more of the same shit, right? Now, I will tell you this, I have played this game, I bought the Deluxe Sun version of the game. I have played it for probably a couple hours, and I was so utterly furious about what I found when I logged in, I haven't been able to play it again. But they've made, in my opinion, at least on the Horde side of game, a super uber mistake. You logged into this game, and that artifact point system that you had been building for your special sword was gone. You push your artifact lookup table, because you've been logging every single day. Like, I was very close to taking up a couple of my weapons and two of my characters. I got like 9 maxed out characters, and it gives me this grayed out version of my table and says all of your artifact points have been consumed and welcome to the expansion. And you're like, oh. It'd be like logging in and my garrison's gone, and they say, "Well, you don't need this anymore. We decided." Oh, okay, right? So the first big mistake they made as a game designer is they didn't make the artifact sacrificing ritual that happened while you were installing the new expansion. They didn't embed that in a story. They didn't make it part of the transition from one to the other to help you rationalize losing all of your work. It's still a bad idea, but they could have transitioned it into something lighter, another system of getting artifact points in some other way for another weapon, another thing, whatever, in the new world, right? So, and I have characters that are very, very powerful in Legion. So I expected to go in and have no problem kicking ass and taking names in the next level. And again, if I had nerded out completely, played the beta, read every single blog on this, yeah, I'd probably be able to actually do that. But I don't have that much time in my life. I mean, it's because I'm an older guy. I think the demographic is older guys at this point. So you're going to have to serve your core customers, right? I mean, just think about it. If I played with a guy in 2005 that was 25 years old, you know, the dude's in his late 30s at this point. Come on. But then I start playing the core quests of Battle for Azeroth. And I find myself on this troll pyramid. It's beautiful. Art's great, right? But the pyramid is so goddamn large that if you just try to jump off one of the steps, you're going to die, right? I've got a lot of health, man. You're just going to die. And so you get the quest at the top of this pyramid, and you got to spend about 5 minutes getting down the pyramid to do your quest at the bottom. Now, maybe there's a teleport I don't know about, but I could not find this thing to save my soul. I couldn't believe they put me in the middle of this frustration dream and called it a game, right? So then I'm like, you know, it's not uncommon to be a grumpy old man when a new expansion comes out. It's just not. But I go to the forums. I'm like, am I crazy? Has this game just been gutted, you know? Sure enough, the forum is packed with an unprecedented amount of criticism about this game. I go online. All the reviews are just tearing this game a new one. I had just dragged a friend back into the game. I had her pay money to change servers. I got her into my guild. My guild has a page on Facebook. No one ever posts on it anymore. I mean, no one said, we're all leaving this game. It just went silent. We're talking, I don't know, 750 people in this guild. I mean, individual characters, we all have our own, you know, tunes, our extra characters. So I've got 8 out of my 9 characters are in that guild. So, you know, it's the same person playing several of these characters. But anyway, it just all went away. Unbelievable, right? So let's rewind. Why is this happening? Why is every expansion getting more and more boring? And why isn't Blizzard capable of listening to their customer base, right? Well, something happened in 2008 that's very, very important. And I don't know exactly the years because it's all an internal secret project. But they started a project, which I believe secret title was Titan. And they poured hundreds of millions of dollars into this. And as I understand it, it was very much like what Destiny turned out, which is obviously a Bungie game. But it was some futuristic MMO. And they built it out of their very best employees. The best StarCraft people, the best World of Warcraft people. And so you had a ton of people moving into this new group to create this new big game. The number I heard at the end was $830 million was invested in this game. Now, I also look at websites telling me that my buddies are worth $20 million. They barely have a coin to bang together, so those numbers could be greatly exaggerated. But Blizzard canceled Titan. I don't know if they canceled Titan because Destiny came out, or why they canceled it. I have close friends that worked on the title, and they stayed pretty tight-lipped even after they left Blizzard. But they said, yeah, it's sort of like Destiny, but, you know, it's a little something else. Now, here's your problem. You got the cream of the crop in your company that know how to get expansions done, moving into this title around 2008. So everything after 2008, all those other expansions started sucking, I think, because they lost their core DNA. Then they all quit. Because where are they going to go? Their seats have been filled. Can't just go back to the old project. Someone's already doing your job. Now, what's interesting about the individuals who quit is they went off to become megastars, right? Some of these dudes went off to ILM. Some guys went to Weta. Some guys are free consultants for everybody. Some people went to Microsoft. Some guys started their own companies. Some guys bought operating shares in Noman Art School. I mean, it's like these dudes are brilliant people all by themselves. They could just push them into the world and they'll always succeed, right? So instead of figuring out a way to recapture all those people and say, well, we're not losing you. You know, you're going to get your paycheck. We'll figure out a way to keep you happy. Let's get in the room together and talk about it. Maybe they tried this. I don't know. Now they give you incentive packages to leave the company. But at the time of this Titan expansion, they tripled their employee numbers. And they told the employees, because I was privy to one of the meetings that they were having, I didn't attend it, but my friend told me right when it happened, he goes, "This is really scary." And I said, "What's going on?" He goes, "Well, they're tripling our employee base, and they're telling us that they're tripling now, but they're going to have to reduce later because they're going to find a bunch of people that don't have skill sets." And to my knowledge, the reduction never occurred, which I don't know if reduction would have helped, but that's a problem. I think the problem is lore fatigue. I think the problem is pulling in geologists to drive the art department. Stop making worlds that are so freaking accurate to our world. We want to escape this place. Don't recreate Earth in your game and then just give it a different name and say, "Oh, this is totally this and that," right? We want to see shit like Zangarmarsh, places that are utterly, phenomenally, conceptually brilliant, but physically impossible. That's what we want, right? That's what I want. What about you guys? So I was working at my game company, I think it was about 2009 or so. I started seeing these expansions coming out and getting really concerned. I thought, well, you know, Blizzard's right down the street. I got friends who work there. Let me see if I can get into the company just as a consultant, you know, just to pitch an idea, see where they go with it. You know, of course, there's a lot of vested biases in everybody who works at a company, right? Like, well, my idea, I've been waiting 10 years for my idea. And sometimes those are good and sometimes those are horrific ideas. If someone's having a really good idea at Blizzard right now, they are not being heard. Let's just put it that way. Again, they may have some amazing game that's 2 days from this episode releasing and I look like a big horse's ass. But right now, World of Warcraft is dying. Dying at a rapid pace. It has a virus of trivial repeat patterns, right? So let's talk about fatigue for 1 second. I think they have lore fatigue. I think they have artwork fatigue. You definitely have fatigue of all the characters you're fighting because they're all the same people with different skins on them and all that stuff. It's boring, okay? No more spiders. No more orgs. Or these, I think they're orgs, right? They're not ogres. They did a great job upgrading all the character art so they look more photoreal. They still have buildings with about 20 polygons. Hey man, I know it was really cool in 2004 to honor 1994 design principles, but it ain't going to fly anymore. You're going to have to upgrade all the polys. You're going to have to make this thing look more realistic. And I'm a proponent against realism being the reason why a game's better, but you're way past the mark, right? Another big criticism from the internal employees, and this is a 2014 comment from one of my friends who left. He said, you know, we would be shown the next version of the engine by the engine programmers at a big presentation internally, and we come away going, what the hell's going on with these people? Our engine looks ridiculously old, and it just at face value, you have no sort of impulse buy when you see the engine play. You have to be into the story and already know why it looks primitive, you know? So I started thinking, this is what I'm going to get into my little expansion here. It was something I was hiding forever because I was trying to get it in, but there's no hope at this point. So here you go, man. So I started tiptoeing around this whole thing thinking, well, I can't design an expansion in the future very easily because it's all predetermined, right? They've now marched through 2 or 3 expansions with just plain old-fashioned vanilla lore. And again, that shit's getting old. We're tired of seeing all that old crap. They almost have bosses saying the exact same phrases to you while you're finding them, right? So I thought, okay, let's do a prequel. Let's do a prequel, because there's a lot of time travel in the game, so there's no problem with flashing backwards to do something. But they have all these different types of magic in the game. You have arcane magic and natural magic and holy magic and a bunch of other stuff, right? But no real story. There is... I did talk to a guy who was super duper into the lore, read all the books, and he was definitely getting me hip to some of the backstory that had been written. And I guess if you pay attention to everything everyone says and read every note and book that you find in the game, the stuff starts to come out. But I mean, playing the game for 13 years and not really getting the answer that I was looking for, I thought this was a pretty good sweet spot. So I created an expansion called Wizards and Demons. And the 2 new classes were going to be wizards and demons, because you can never really be a demon. You can be Arcane and have a little demon off to the side, but you can't play that race. Wizards being sort of your vanilla mage, sort of an ambidextrous, all-purpose magic user. And so what I did was create a backstory where some wizards, the first incarnation of magic users, discovered various forces in the universe that were capable of being sort of the alchemy of magic, right? And they realized very quickly that it was super duper risky to play with this stuff on their homeworld. And so what they did was they took a continent and lifted it into space so they could practice up in their little flat earth disc, literally, and develop schools of thought on how to do each individual magic. So they divided up the continent into the each individual magic, except they had one challenge. Arcane magic was this very dark, mysterious stuff. It always ended up being sort of a problem the more you played with it. And so in order to, this is the backstory, in order to get some arcane magic onto this continent, they built a keep, which is basically a big giant fortress to keep something inside, right? There's a great movie called The Keep from the 80s, you're gonna see it. And they summoned a demon into the keep. And they summoned him directly into an apparatus that held his throat, held his arms, held his body, and they wrapped a big giant chain around him. And in sort of the cartoon fashion that is World of Warcraft, the chain went completely around the continent. He was basically chained to the continent. And they built the keep such that his exuding arcane energy would leak out of the keep under the grounds. And they put up some magic barriers to keep it from leaking all over the place. But they allowed a body of water to get tainted with this stuff, and they watched how it tainted the land. Right? So imagine a round disc. One side is one third of the whole place is arcane, and the other two thirds are all the other magics divided up. Now there's individual cities that they brought with them that were already indigenous to the continent, and then they built schools, individual schools for the individual arts or the magics, right? But what happens is that the wizards, there's about 12 of them. One of them is sort of the lead. He's the lead guy. He's our big hero. And the other 11 are just good old boys, you know, good old wizards trying to work out their various skill sets. But they end up all playing with the arcane power a little too much. And they don't realize it, but they're all getting possessed. And they're getting possessed by the demon who says, you know what you need to do? You need to get me out of this place. Take me to the center of the continent, which has this sort of worshiping area. Sort of a Stonehenge-y kind of place. And you need to perform this ritual. It's really important. And so they get possessed. They push him out. This is all the front story. They get him in the middle of this continent. They start casting this spell. And that's when the good guy wakes up and notices what's going on. Everybody's gone and they're all doing this ritual. And he's seeing it from a few miles away. This is a big cauldron of purple magic going up, and he realizes, oh shit, this is about to bring down potentially everything from that world into this world. So he casts this massive spell, which breaks it, but it also causes a gigantic dispersion of energy. It explodes in their face. All the dudes down in the center are killed. The demon is knocked cold backwards towards the keep. The chain breaks. The good guy's blasted backwards. They're both knocked cold. The good guy wakes up first, drags the demon inside the keep, kind of makes really quick, you know, fixes to the keep. It's not going to hold forever. And then he, in his almost dying breath, sends a message back to Azeroth to get us to come and help out. When the continent breaks, because it breaks as a result of this huge pop from this magic going wrong, it breaks the continent into sort of two semi yin-yang shapes, right? One's all arcane, one's all good. But the guy casts a spell to blanket the entire place into phases. So there's two little islands in opposite areas. One's going to be the demon starting area, and one's the wizard starting area. You show up as whatever the hell you are, but you can also start in those two different regions and build that way. But what happens is you show up and the place is pretty much barren, except for even the arcane place is a little bit barren. There's not much to do. There's no places that exist. And you show up and there's this big stone there with a big combination on it. Now, the first one is really simple. You just turn it and do a couple little things. Pick up a rock here, put it in there. Sort of like the formation in Indiana Jones Temple of Doom, where he's putting those rocks in there and turning it on, right? But it unravels this thing. My big feature upgrade was that as soon as this thing turns, a beast from that new region that's about to unlock runs up to you and screams at you, and you get a title plate and you get kind of a preview of what's going to be in that new area. They actually did that in, I believe, Legion, right? It's funny how those things happen, right? But immediately, a water drains out of this lake, and there's a whole world in there, a whole bunch of people, a different race you've never seen before. But the cool thing about this expansion is that you don't get to see places until they're there, so they don't have to gank your flight. They can let you fly wherever you want. They design it to be flying friendly on the first day, right? You unlock the different regions by getting the combination pieces to put into these stones, and you end up unlocking the whole thing. Now, of course, your dungeons are all the schools, all the different buildings that you don't quite understand that were being built to harness a particular type of magic. But the keep is going to be the big final game, final expansion content. And the keep is sort of like a labyrinth. So as you're fighting in a dungeon, the keep is changing shapes. And so you're going to have to be in the right place at the right time when one of these cantilevers, it might be a floor piece, moves up and hovers over the beast. And so you're going to have to be in the right place to do the combination. So adding an organic element to the actual dungeons themselves. Another big upgrade is that if you are, say, natural magic, you can actually walk into a lake when you're injured, put your hands in the lake, hit a combination, a spell, and it actually sucks life out of the lake and repairs you. Same thing with going up to a tree. So you can get a bunch of different augmentations if your holy, various holy structures can actually heal you. So it's a little tiny thing, doesn't make a big deal. Not a lot of injury issues anymore in the game because they give you plenty of power to heal yourself properly. But for some of those classes that struggle, it might be a valuable little addition to the game. Another thing I put in there was that mounts start to have some distinction between them, right? So let's say that you're in the previous expansions and you have an area that has a bunch of tigers, but you have a tiger mount. Well, if you're willing to get on your tiger mount, it's so ferocious and formidable and bigger than all the other least normal tigers. There's maybe an elite class tiger that might not fall for this, but if you can ride through those areas without having them attack you. And so you get to the next one and it's a bunch of dinosaurs. So you jump on your dinosaur and you ride through those and they think you're one of them, or at least they're freaked out enough by your mount. They won't mess with it, therefore they won't mess with you. So that's the basics of the expansion. I drew quite a bit of artwork to figure out how this place should look. Started drawing some of the potential characters that would be in the game. But again, Blizzard has all the power to turn that basic concept into a game. But think about it. You get away from the lore of World of Warcraft in its pure form. All those names you already know, all the associations you need to know, and you're doing a backstory. It feeds in perfectly with the game. And if there have been lore written about various magics, you can either put them in the mezzanine, like the Clone Wars between this beginning and where we ended up starting Vanilla WoW, or you can sew it into the game itself. But the cool thing is that this world is all magical. Everything is magical. So the geology problem that we have, we're making everything make sense, doesn't have to make sense anymore, because each balkanized region of this continent has its own magic. It has its own owners. And so if you walked in and the world went from purple to green, it makes complete sense, right? The demon race I wanted to make very similar to Ralph Bakshi's demons from the movie Wizards. So they're kind of goofy and strange and they're kind of funny. It brings back the comedic element to a particular character. So as you see your character just walking, it's kind of funny. You know, and you could probably, if they were to upgrade the engine, they could allow you to choose sort of how do you want your demon to look. Do you want him to have horns? Do you want to have a big body, thin body? And you could make all kinds of different little demons. It's all part of the same rigging. You know, maybe again, you make certain movements a little bit different. The idols and the walks and maybe how they strike. You could create a few weapons. There's tons of demons in the game, right? But we don't want those demons from vanilla being in the fucking expansion, right? The wizards, they're very robed, individuals, they have the hoods as opposed to having your head free. It's part of the look and feel of this thing. And so I think that you could create a lot of enchanting elements with them, plus introduce a bunch of new magical capabilities that have never been in the game. Look at every game that's ever been made with magic, every movie that's ever been made with magic. Just lift ideas, right? Rebrand them, restructure them, put them in the game. So, World of Warcraft, I hope you survive. I hope you repatch yourself. I definitely will never, ever buy World of Warcraft again without hearing rave reviews from close friends of mine. So they got $79 out of me and probably 2 months worth of subscriptions trying to figure this game out. And they burned that bridge. They really burned the shit out of that bridge. So again, I've never played a game that long in my life. I may never again. Maybe I'm just an old guy, I don't know, but I still love games. I played Fallout now for 3 years. I'm still finding new rooms I've never been in. I've played the crap out of this game. So there are ways of still capturing a user's attention. So that's a little weird episode for you. If you haven't been to Deep Thoughts Radio, please go. It's a place where you can change formats from audio to video, video to audio. There's a locked Facebook group and a Patreon page. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.